Good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Hugh Chivett and your co-host today is Jenny Lamb. Jenny, good morning to you. On today's Back Chat, has Hong Kong got talent? The annual World Talent Ranking report compares how well we foster and attract talent. And this year, our city has dropped significantly. Meanwhile, Singapore is the highest ranking Asian economy on the index, with Switzerland the overall winner. Well, the survey suggests that we are better at appealing to professionals overseas and less good at making our own, with very low public spending on education, a big reason for marking us down. So is that fair? This year, the government released a list of 11 types of talent, from naval architect to game designers and waste treatment specialists, that they want to lure to Hong Kong to boost our economy. How is that scheme going? What sort of talent do you think we lack? Let us know your thoughts. You can leave a message on our Facebook page, Backchat and RTHK Radio 3. You can email us, backchat at rthk.hk. Call us on 233 88266. After 9:20, we're talking about the case of the relocation of a job training centre for disabled teenagers to make way for a civil service training college in Kwun Tong. Joining us for our discussion now, we have with us Anthony Au, Honorary President of the Hong Kong Information Technology Federation, Steve Barnes, who's co-founder of the Hong Kong Visa Centre, Mark Michelson on the line, Chairman of Asia CEO Forum with IMA Asia, and Kerry Wong, Vice President of Human Resources of Greater China Region of a multinational corporation with major business in manufacturing services. Mr. Au, we'll start with you maybe. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. So, yeah, we slipped eight places in this ranking. Doesn't look like we're doing so well. What are your thoughts on this and talent in Hong Kong?
Well, I think that most of these data are 2 years behind. I think that Hong Kong will slip further. And people is the most important asset of any city, in particular in Hong Kong. I think that almost the only asset in Hong Kong is people. So I think that this is going to be a big impact to Hong Kong.
Do you think we're failing then in building talent in Hong Kong?
Yes or no. I think that Hong Kong used to be quite good, but over these few years, we have really fallen behind. But on the other hand, one door closed, another door will be open. So if this can be a wake-up call, then it will be good for us before too late.
So what do you think can be done to improve the quality of the people?
Oh, I think that people are talking about import. I think there is a short-term solution. But what I prefer more is short-term as well as long-term strategies. Long-term, I think that we should, many, many years ago, depend on ourselves and better train our young people. I think that the young people is really the hope of Hong Kong's tomorrow. And for the short-term, I think there's a number of things can be done.
Yeah, of course, one of the measures of this particular ranking is how much cities and countries are spending on education. So what do you think can be done to improve that education aspect in order to improve the local talent?
I personally do not believe in money can solve the problem. I think it's more the passion of the people, of the trainer and also the trainee and also the parents that is important. If you're really talking about investment, I hope I'm not wrong. Hong Kong ranked 31 in investment and development, and also Singapore, which is doing much better than us, is only 34. So then if you compare the figures in terms of money spending, we are not spending that less. I think this is one of the biggest pitfalls in Hong Kong. We always want to solve problem with money. And this is a problem I don't think money can solve at all.
People used to talk about a brain drain in the 90s and even afterwards, people leaving Hong Kong, talented people leaving Hong Kong. And then there was an idea that people were coming back again. I don't know what the situation is like now. Do you sense that talent leaves Hong Kong, more leaves than comes in?
Oh, definitely. People are leaving. Just like
they are leaving.
Now, yeah, in particular, young people. That's
very depressing, isn't it?
I think I'm looking at it from another angle. What goes out might come back. If you have the soil to nurture the talent. And on the other hand, since we're talking about medium term or short term solution of importing people, I would rather think that we can have quite innovative way of getting the resources we want. without the money that we have to spend that much. Because money cannot buy people. I don't think that money can buy people. As many of the experts and many of the studies have proven, that people who come in for money, they will left for money. And it will not be not that long. As you look at most of the short-term people, 3 years contract, 2 years contract, at the end of it, they just go away. And who is losing? Hong Kong is losing. So
Mr. Au, I mean, you with the information technology sector, what can Hong Kong do to improve in terms of information technology to retain people here?
I think it's always chicken and egg. You have the market, you have the people, and then more people will come without paying them to come. So I think that we need the market. Very unfortunately, over the past so many years, we are really destroying one of the very important, I would say, tradition of the way of doing business in Hong Kong is to cut out competitiveness. Competitive business. You're talking about there's not less competition today in Hong Kong. And you're talking about, well, sorry to say that, one TV station, one MTR, and when MTR fail, and everybody stand there doing nothing. So, I mean, this is I think, is important, because if the economy is going to flourish, people will just come. And
Okay, well, Steve Barnes from Hong Kong Visa Center. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us today. What's your take on this? It seems like there's kind of a little bit of, I mean, we've got these schemes in place now. And there was some announced over the summer to identify these 11 very specific areas of talent that we need. And there are various schemes, as you know, to attract IT talent, aren't there? What's going on? Is it like a global market for, do you have to sort of offer more and more to get these talented people? How does it work?
Well, there's definitely a global market for this talent, but the approach in Hong Kong is really driven by mostly the private sector, private businesses that are operating here and can see the potential for particular technology going forward. And then there's the government initiatives. The Immigration Department have got two programs, one called the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme and another one called the Technology Talent Admission Scheme, both of which are incredibly bureaucratically cumbersome. They don't really accord with the way that sort of real human beings think about careers and how they wish to make moves, and ultimately...
Tell us more about that. That's interesting. How do they not work with real life?
Well, for example, the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme. The program takes between 9 and 12 months to work its way through. It's very much a black box program. The sort of application process is a case of kind of like filling in the forms, submitting your application, and then dealing with an immigration officer for 6 to 9 months, verifying the veracity of your CV, very bureaucratic. There's a good reason for in way the process administered. But, when you look at normal human beings, if they're making a sort of a decision to relocate to another country, sight unseen, so to speak, certainly without a job offer, because this Quality Migrant Admission Scheme doesn't require you to have a job offer to participate in it. To put your life on hold somewhere else for 9 to 12 months to go through this administrative process, and then at the end of it, essentially run the risk of not being approved, doesn't really augur very well for, attracting the brightest and the best to, come and participate in what we're all about. Particularly when you understand that on the flip side, if the private sector extends a job offer to a talented foreign national, within 6 to 8 weeks, that visa can be approved and, they're on their way and here you go. So whilst, it's laudable that the government are trying to do something in this respect, invariably they fall back on incredibly bureaucratic processes that don't actually accord with the reality of how, individual talent wants to move, particularly in an international setting. Moreover, if you look at the most recent program, the Technology Talent Admission Scheme, I mean, it's clear that was conjured up by a whole bunch of bureaucrats in smoke-filled back rooms, not really understanding at all about how actually sort of the market for talent works in Hong Kong, and without going into the sort of too much of the detail of that program. It's incredibly cumbersome. It's limited to science parks and to Cyberport businesses that are operating out there. It's limited to various sort of specific skill sets that are sort of esoteric in nature and not that sort of readily available anywhere around the world generally. And then if you are able to go through the process of successfully participating in the scheme as an employer, you're then expected to embark on this sort of local recruitment exercise and maintain a number of local jobs against each job that's been availed to a foreign national who comes in under this program. And then there's an ongoing reporting requirement. And so it goes on and on and on and on. And, you know, we've been doing immigration in Hong Kong for 25, 26 years now. And we haven't had a single inquiry in relation to this program because my assessment of it is that it's really sort of ham-fisted and half-baked. And I think that's what the private sector think about it as well. It's just too hard to get to participate in.
Yeah. Okay. So too much red tape. But going back to the point, Anthony, about you mentioned earlier that you didn't think money would solve the problem, and you mentioned that basically we just have one MTR station or one TV station. How can we improve the prospects, the career prospects for our young people? What do you think can be done?
I think that if you just look back in the 90s, and the market is flourishing, and people just come. Not just local people, everybody go into the market. I think that for the long term, the market is essential. We're always thinking about the China market, but no, Hong Kong is the market. And before, if you're looking at the 80s, we sell software to Singapore, we sell it to Thailand, we sell it to all Asian countries. So how to do it again, I think then is not a single answer. But how we were able to do it again is really, you mentioned about Korea. Korea is a good example how the government can stimulate the market and make it happen. And I think that we need a push to begin with, and then it's going to be rolling downhill, and then that is going to where we can create the market again. On the other hand, I think that to solve the short-term problem, I was actually this week at a 50th anniversary reunion with many of the people who was the brain drain, and they left Hong Kong and go to Canada. If you look at the survey, Canada is doing very well. Overall, they are number six. And many of the people, most of the people are the immigrants, and many from Hong Kong. Among the people I met this week, many are really needing people. Scientists, people top in the aviations in Canada and so on, these people are all retired. And they have their roots in Hong Kong. And the important thing is if we can make the roots in Hong Kong, these people already have Hong Kong IDs. Hmm. I mean...
Okay. Also, as I say, is Kerry Wong. Mr. Wong, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. What's your take on this? And we've been hearing that not only are we not really very good at fostering talent, but actually we are losing talent, that talent is going overseas to Canada and so on. Is that your experience? And if so, you know, how do we address that?
I want to share an experience within our company. We have hired an employee. He got his PhD degree in England and coming back to China. He's a Chinese national. But he liked to have a residency visa in Hong Kong. So we help him and we engage him. But our operation is in China, in Shenzhen. So the immigration people, department, let him work in Shenzhen, but claiming he has to stay in Hong Kong for 7 years in order to get an ID card. But the immigration department allow him to do this. That he stay in Shenzhen for 5 days, come back to Hong Kong for two nights with his family. So later on, about last year, he got his residency as a Hong Kong citizen. So I think the government will try to accommodate those kind of people, talent people that we need in Hong Kong. So he's an expert in optic engineering. So I think the government will not trying to block those application into having a work visa in the region. In Hong Kong.
So are you saying that the option of living in Hong Kong and working in mainland China will help us retain talent? But we're talking about people who actually work in Hong Kong as well. How do we make sure these talented people actually work in Hong Kong?
I think the work the general living condition here in Hong Kong is not attractive at all. So it's difficult to attract people. If they have the choice, they probably will not come to Hong Kong. And also, the cost of having a decent one-bedroom apartment is quite expensive. So this is a main concern for them.
What's your take on that, Stephen?
In the long run.
Yeah, sorry. What's your take on that, Stephen? Is Hong Kong not offering certain things that Canada or Singapore is offering and hence our drop in the ranking in terms of retaining talent?
From the government perspective, I think the Singaporean government is giving more money to subsidize these kind of things than as compared to Hong Kong. Now you can see, even though they basically say for the profit tax by corporation. So Singapore used to be, we say we have the lowest corporate profit tax in Asia region, but no more, not longer.
Yeah.
The way the Immigration Department look at it is that so long as the employment contract with the foreign national, indeed the Chinese national in this the Chinese national in this instance is based with a Hong Kong company that's well established in Hong Kong that has operations just across the boundary. As you know, whether you're a foreign national or Chinese national, it doesn't really matter if you're compared to whether you're a local. A large number of people cross the boundary every day to do what they do in China and then come back to Hong Kong. So as I say, as far as the Immigration Department are concerned, if the job offer to the foreign national or the Chinese national is extended from a well established company in Hong Kong, the fact that there is a requirement to spend a significant amount of time each week across the boundary in Chinese manufacturing operations before you then come back to Hong Kong, to live your life. As far as that infrastructure is established, then the Immigration Department will buy into that idea. So it's not really a case of being able to get a visa to live in Hong Kong and actually work in China per se. The actual structure of the visa programs means that it all has to be predicated in Hong Kong, recognizing obviously that so much of our economic activity does generate across the boundary each day, because so much of such a large percentage of our population crosses the boundary each day.
All right, Mark Michelson is with us. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks for joining us today. Let's just talk a little bit maybe about kind of local talent and the attitude perhaps of multinationals towards talent in Hong Kong. Wonder how we're doing here. One of the big reasons for being marked down, as I mentioned, is the low spending on low public spending on education in Hong Kong as a percentage of GDP. Does that concern you? Do you think that's significant?
Well, relatively. I mean, first of all, let me make one point. Hong Kong has gone down, and there are a lot of issues that need to be raised, and many of them have just been raised in the past few minutes. But, 18 out of 63 isn't as bad as it could be. In a few areas, it's pointed out that we're pretty good in finance skills and in international experience, and actually in percentage of women, we're third, compared to 36 for Singapore. So some strong points, but exactly the points that people have mentioned is a challenge. And that's, a lot of it has to do, we've got money, and we spend a fair amount of money on education, but is it spent effectively? And is this bureau, what was described, I think, accurately as Hong Kong being bureaucratically cumbersome, has that undermined a lot of what we're doing in terms of where it's targeted? For example, career development was mentioned. We don't do a very good job, and we're not alone in that, in terms of finding places that people can feel comfortable. Also in terms of bureaucratically cumbersome, in terms of a welcome to the kind of industries, and especially in high tech, that are appealing to a lot of people. Other places tend to make it easier. Of course, we know what's happening in Shenzhen, but in Singapore as well, and just in terms of disruptive industries, for example, Singapore has just been more open, not completely open, but just more open, seeing it as a way to stimulate development of local companies. And to some extent, it's worked. So it's not just money. Of course, they give a lot of money and they give a lot of incentives and all that sort of thing, which does have some impact. But it's the way it's handled. It's the way it's spent. And I think that's particularly important.
Yeah. Well, when you say open, what, openness in what way? You mean bureaucratic procedures are cut down?
Yeah, it's just
they're more likely to give a visa, as Kerry Wong was saying.
Well, just some of the famous ID companies, the Ubers and Airbnb, have gotten into Singapore. Of course, now what's happened is the major Singapore company called Grab has taken over most of that. So did that work? Maybe it did. Maybe that helped in terms of that approach. But, you know, it's just easier to get things done. And, you know, for example, when SMEs try to get some of the money to develop, for example, businesses that might be attracted to people coming in or coming back to work in, they find it very difficult to get through the red tape. I hope it's getting easier, but it's certainly one of the major complaints we get within our group and also within the chambers.
So we've talked a lot about the red tape and investment, but interestingly, this IMD World Talent Ranking that we're talking about, the top are actually Switzerland and Denmark, and it's not so much about the money, it's also about the quality of life.
Yeah.
It's about the quality of life. What is it that Hong Kong is not offering? I mean, we all know that we have very high rent, that may be part of it, but what else about the quality of life?
We're 61 on the cost of living index out of 63, which probably isn't the most attractive level to be at if you're trying to attract people to come in or come back. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you can argue that pollution, air quality, et cetera, is one of those issues. But it's just, you know, it's just cost of housing, obviously, and just trying to find a comfortable life. I teach at one of the universities, and when I hear, you know, some of my students, they have no prospect of getting a place where they can live going forward unless they live with their parents. And so they have to think of other places, and so they might see alternatives outside of Hong Kong that might be attractive. And somehow we have to find ways to deal with that, not an easy issue. And I know it's a top priority for the government, but clearly this seems to have an impact.
You say you teach at a university. I mean, do you actually think that our education system is actually quite strong? Because if you look at a bit more closely at what's been happening in education in Hong Kong, you could argue that, in fact, we're doing extremely well. Our universities are very, very highly rated around the world. And even in this report, it talks about the PISA scores, and we're like second or third in the world when it comes to PISA scores.
We're third and Singapore's
exactly.
First.
And if we're spending less money, but as a proportion of GDP, that's public spending on education. But then we don't spend very much. Our public spending is relatively small compared to GDP, compared to, you know, the Northern European countries and everything like that.
In many ways, we're effective. Of course, I teach at tertiary level, and it's pretty good. And at the graduate level in particular, we have very good students. In my program, fewer than 10% of the applicants get in.
Yeah, so it's not just a question of throwing money at our education system.
80% of those are from the mainland. And, you know, that's the other thing, is that competition is very strong in getting fellowships and getting jobs if those who want to stay and so on, because the level of students from China that are coming into Hong Kong and those that want to stay is very high, because they have to jump through a lot of hoops even to get here.
Mm. Kerry Wong, I mean, some people have said that all these schemes are basically aimed at attracting talent from the mainland, that it's too narrowly focused on the mainland. Stephen Barnes is smiling now. And the same goes for students, you could argue, as well. Have you got any reaction to that? Any thoughts on that, Kerry Wong?
I think there's a traditional culture, Chinese culture, that if you are coming from a poor family, then the best way or path that you can excel in your life will be through education. So I think lots of people, their family try to pay more attention to have their kids to be a good student, excel in their field, and so.
But not just in education. I think the claim is that a lot of these schemes are basically aimed at attracting mainlanders rather than looking around the world.
I would say partly because people are looking. I mean, people are looking for those that they can have their same common. Languages. Right.
Yeah.
And then there's, it's easier in communication.
Yes.
I want to explore further.
Yeah.
There are two sides of the sword. Because if you, some of the parents in Hong Kong, they try to put their kids into those tutorial group, tutorials, and they spend all the time after school. So they don't have their, I think they don't have their own thinking. This is a problem. And also, second thing is that, in those students in the secondary or even in the college level, they don't have the courage to speak out in the class. This is deficiency as compared to the other Asian countries, like Singaporean. Singapore students, they are really vocal.
Yeah. Okay, interesting points. We've got to put you on hold because we've got a break for the news for 3 minutes at 9 o'clock. Do drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk. We've got some interesting emails to share with you following the news. Before that, the latest weather. Sunny periods forecast for today and relatively low visibility. Temperatures up to about 25 degrees. And the outlook becoming cool appreciably tomorrow morning. Dry with sunny periods in the following couple of days. The latest readings, 23 Celsius at the moment, and the relative humidity is up at 83%. Back in 3 minutes.
Because they are not a single company, yet in many ways they are acting as one.
You're listening to the news on RTHK.
Welcome back. This is Backchat at a Wednesday morning with Jenny Lam and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're talking about Hong Kong and talent, as on the back of this World Talent Ranking report, in which we have slipped a bit to 16th, behind Singapore. We're talking about the reasons for that, the weaknesses, the problems with attracting and nurturing talent, growing our own talent in Hong Kong, with Kerry Wong, who's Vice President, Human Resources of Greater China Region of a multinational corporation with major business in manufacturing services, Mark Michelson, who's Chairman Asia CEO Forum of IMA Asia, Steve Barnes, co-founder of the Hong Kong Visa Centre, and Anthony Au, who's Honorary President of the Hong Kong Information Technology Federation. Later, we're going to be talking about the controversy over the Civil Service Training College they want to build in Kwun Tong. They're going to have to relocate a job training centre for disabled teenagers to do that, and there's concern over what's going to happen to those teenagers and the services that they offer. Which are pretty much unique. We'll be hearing more about that later. If you want to comment on anything you've heard or are to hear, then please email us, backchat@rthk.hk, or you can comment on our Facebook page as well. That's Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Gloria says in an email, the talent index captures the effort invested in developing local talent while being able to attract overseas staff, unquote. Why Hong Kong position drops? There are two main reasons. One, the education system here is yet to be fine-tuned in the first place. The 334 scheme, which has been in place since 2009, does not nurture more bright students than the old system. The 9 local universities in Hong Kong offer limited seats, and every year more than 10,000 students who are qualified for a university place are denied entry. And second, the living standard in Hong Kong, in particular housing, is unaffordable. Overseas talents, who may not necessarily be provided with full subsidies on housing, will not have an incentive to work here. Pollution here too is serious. Thanks very much indeed for that. Bowen says, your topic today touches on a sensitive issue. There may be a correlation between specific cultures and professional accomplishments. The fact that Singapore and Hong Kong are the only two Asian economies which have made it to the top 20 in the 2018 IMD World Talent Ranking may not have happened by accident. All of the other 18 economies are Western economies. That may have something to do with what Kerry Kennedy said in yesterday's news wrap about the survey being based more on the perception of CEOs living around the world than it is on hard and fast scientific measurements. Nevertheless, it's commonly acknowledged that the Chinese culture is much better in cultivating bureaucratic talents and producing civil servants than it is in producing high-level professionals and scientists. The emphasis on giving students copious notes prepared by their teachers and cultivating their ability to reproduce the contents of those notes under exam conditions is not a good way to nurture professionals and scientists. The fact that both Hong Kong and Singapore had been British colonies in the past may have made a difference. Maybe newer education methods employed in some of the better local and primary and secondary schools and above have contributed to Hong Kong remaining among the top 20. One can only surmise how traditional rote learning, alongside substitute bowing to authorities for independent thinking, is still deeply entrenched in, say, mainland China, which ranks 39th in the list. It's not unreasonable to query where mainland China would rank in a list like the present one if she does not have Western countries to send her students to for further education, and she's not able to import foreign talents from abroad. In this regard, Hong Kong's further homogenising with the mainland and the blurring of the two systems under one country does not bode well for the city as well as the mainland. Other than nurturing homegrown talents, the only way to express Hong Kong, the only way to ensure Hong Kong has a sufficient pool of high-level professional talents is through attracting and retaining talents from outside. Clamping down on freedom of expression, singling out individuals for retribution by denying them entry on grounds of where their political sympathies lie is not a good way to enhance our city's attractiveness and image of livability. Those thoughts from Bowen. Thank you very much indeed for that. Backchat at rthk.hk. Stephen Barnes, do you want to comment on anything you've heard there?
Yeah, well, I mean, to the point just before the break about China being a source of our talent. I mean, if you look at the sort of the two immigration programs that have come into play since the handback in 1997 that ostensibly opened the door to Chinese talent, one is the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme. And last time I looked at that, those numbers, I believe that only 23% of those applications ever get approved. And of those 23%, 77% come from the mainland. So really that program should rather be called the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme. It should be called the Quality Mainland Migrant Admission Scheme. So there's no doubt.
Is there anything wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with that?
Not at all.
Kerry Wong was saying there's a linguistic, obvious, they can operate in Chinese.
Not at all. And I mean, my main criticism behind that program is not so much the fact that we're able to attract the brightest and the best from China. That's all to our good. My main criticism about the program is the way that it's administered and the way that it's open to all comers, because essentially what is happening for that program is the vast majority of applicants are coming from the Indian or Pakistan subcontinent, and frankly they really don't stand a real chance of getting approved. The program is basically open to all comers, which is, you know, fair enough, but you know, when you get really sort of realistic about what the intention behind the program is really all about, there are ways to, in a sense, pre-filter qualified applicants from actually entering into an application process and make the whole thing a lot easier for those people.
What's wrong with the people coming from the
Nothing wrong with it, but what happens is that in India and in Pakistan there are these immigration consulting firms that make all these promises to individuals that, because it's an open door program that you can apply to, you get applicants from people who have absolutely no chance of qualifying whatsoever, and consequently the whole initiative is swamped with non-starters, and it just, you know, makes for a very long, difficult process for those people, you know, who are going to qualify for it eventually. So the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme has certainly allowed a pathway into Hong Kong for the best Chinese talent to come and live and contribute to our society. Similarly, the mission scheme for mainland talents and professionals, which is a kind of a flavoured version of the general employment policy, which is designed for non-Chinese foreign national professionals to come and work in Hong Kong. The Admission Scheme for Mainland Talents and Professionals is a really good program. It's very, very sort of brutally administered in terms of the diligence that the Immigration Department place on both the employing entities that are offering jobs to Chinese talents that want to come and work here, and also indeed the caliber of the Chinese applicants themselves.
Okay.
It's very, very, very well administered in that regard.
So that's about bringing people in from outside Hong Kong. But going back to the one of the points mentioned in the email by Bowen, I think, was that the Hong Kong students' ability to think independently and the culture of learning. I mean, I think he mentioned that Chinese culture seems to be very good at nurturing bureaucrats. Kerry Wong, what do you think? What's your take on that? You mentioned earlier yourself that you felt that because you teach at the university, you said that the local students tend not to speak up for themselves. It's independent thinking, what do you think?
I think gradually, this is my experience for the past 30 years. We haven't changed. Students in the school are still not afraid to speak out. Of what their idea or what they are thinking in their mind. You know?
So what can we do to improve that?
It is difficult. It is difficult. I think I went to stay to study 30 something years ago. We had that. Me too. I scared to speak out. You know, but nowadays, when I talk to those students and also when I interview people. They still have this kind of the characters. So I think we really need to have changes in our way of raising our kids in the family, and also the way that we teach our students by our teachers.
What do you think, Anthony? Is there some way we can improve that?
I have been teaching in high school, running workshop for them on how to think and how to speed up. And I find it quite effective. I have been going over to over 150 schools and not all successful. But I think that something, if done in the earlier stage, starting from Form 2 and Form 3, and then it will be good. One of the biggest problems is the narrow thinking, because they're always thinking about examinations. And you see that we talk about the 3-3-4. It was good. It was a good idea, but very bad implementation. It was one to have the student to have science and arts together, but at the end of the day, people just take five subjects in order to pass it. So then it really defeats the whole purpose. And while I went to school, in school certificate, we could take 10 subjects. And then we go to examination for 9 subjects. Then you have a really, really open thinking of different scenarios and so on. But today, this is one of the biggest problems. I heard that there's a lot of reform, but whatever reform is not really important. Implementation is important because good ideas doesn't work.
Could I make a comment?
Yeah, please.
Based on a small sample, but it's graduate students, because some of my students are actually Hong Kong government officials. I've taught some younger ones in one of my courses, and I've taught workshops very recently of more mid-level to not quite upper level, higher level current civil servants. And actually, I've been at that level. I've been very impressed by their independence of thought and by their ideas and so on. It's a different atmosphere, and maybe they don't feel that comfortable doing it when they're in government, actually doing their jobs. But certainly in these situations, many of them are quite impressive in this area. So at least at some point, and again, it's a small sample, but at some point...
Aren't they kind of the elite ones anyway?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know...
We're talking about the elite.
Obviously, the ones that go in... The ones in my courses, the one where not many people are chosen, that's pretty elite, I guess. But the others are just a group of civil servants. Many of them are in their 50s, and some of them are a little bit younger, but, you know, they've been around for a while.
And what about the young people? What about your experience of, you know, MBA students and things like that, Mark?
Well, you know, it's a graduate level a little bit, but certainly, and again, it's my limited experience, some of them have made some suggestions about, for example, in government policy on some of the issues in their presentations that are pretty good suggestions that maybe don't really follow what's being done in government now. Now, whether they raise those internally or not, that's another question. But certainly in this kind of atmosphere, it's been encouraging.
Just going back then to the question of the import of talents and attracting talents, do you think Hong Kong looks like a boom town, because if you were deciding where to go around the world, a kind of, you know, an overall image, an overall impression, I think is important, you know, because it might be quite a commitment. You might be taking your family there and things like that. Do you think people want to come to Hong Kong because they think it's a good place to go, that they will learn something and they can move upward on their career, or does it look like we're kind of languishing? Mark Michelson.
I think it certainly is. When I first came to Hong Kong, it certainly had that reputation, and I think many
people found that way.
And many of the people that came with me, you know, have done many things since they've been in Hong Kong, have found that it really, really, really is effective. Whether that's as true now as it was before, I think some questions will be raised, and I think other people around the table maybe have a better perspective on that.
Yeah.
I have been running an incubation center for young people, for startups. And a number of these people are from overseas, like Denmark, and also from Europe and so on. I believe that they are doing quite well in Hong Kong. I think there's always two types of people. One people who want the challenge, they come to Hong Kong. Some people who want very clean, they go to Singapore. But you do not need 100% of all the people. You just need 20%, that you will be enough. If you look at the IMD report, in comparison with the appeal, Hong Kong is 14 and Singapore is 15. So then I think that we are not really that far away, and people like different things. On the other hand, I think there's a lot of things that can be done better to attract a lot of other talent. I know two young people from Denmark. They just picked up their luggage and come to Hong Kong with nothing. And they don't mind living in the small quarters because it's only temporary. But what is important is that by the end of the day, they do something, they get some achievement, and they want to go back. And Hong Kong is a place for achievement. I always tell my friends who from Canada, they retire, if they want to live longer, come to Hong Kong. Hong Kong have the highest.
I agree. It used to be a place like this. And Mark Michelson, as you're saying, when you came, what, in the 80s or something?
Yeah.
My experience as well, it was like that. Yeah, and I arrived with nothing and, you know, built everything from there. But is it still like that, do you think, Anthony?
I think yes or no. I think it's more difficult.
Danish people's graduates still come to Hong Kong on the off chance? Yeah.
I saw a number.
Steve Barnes, yeah.
Without a doubt. An entrepreneur is an entrepreneur, and Hong Kong is renowned for getting things done. It's a small geography. It's particularly now because we're so well communicating with each other. Foreign nationals come here and they've got some experience of entrepreneurship or doing business back in their home country or perhaps some other countries, and they land here and they understand just how easy it is to get things done. So there's no doubt that to the comments about, say, these Danish guys that came with just their backpack. And it being like that back in the 1980s, which were primarily the Brits back then. But that's still very much a phenomenon with foreign nationals, young entrepreneurs basically getting off the aircraft, smelling the air, understanding there's money to be made here and wanting a part of it. That hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, we have Hong Kong youngsters who go in the other direction. There are young people who start restaurants, for example, in places like Australia and Canada. I think what we're talking about here is if these people have these innovative, creative ideas and these abilities, how do we get them to stay here?
Well, indeed. I mean, the grass is always greener, right? And there's always going to be people that want to go off and explore new challenges, however those challenges represent themselves. And invariably, you know, people that understand what Hong Kong's all about come back to Hong Kong because we're actually better off than a lot of other places that people typically head off to.
Mm. In what sense are we better off? Because,
well,
I mean, we get marked down for the cost of living, for example. Yeah, and we've talked about small properties and things like that. But you're saying we do have...
Yeah, I mean, people, young people particularly...
Oh, it's quite a nice place to live, isn't it?
It's a great place to live, right? And young people will just go with the flow. It's all part and parcel of the experience. And as their circumstances improve economically, they move up the economic ladder and they just become part of the Hong Kong success story. The opportunities here are superb compared to other jurisdictions. Whilst there are some problems, obviously, actually getting down to doing business is relatively easy, and actually getting immigration permissions, all things considered, as long as you basically qualify, you can get those permissions. And compared to other jurisdictions that are extremely expensive to get into and very cumbersome to deal with and have huge demands on the entrepreneurial talent, Hong Kong doesn't typically have those expectations. So it gets done here, thankfully.
I think both Kerry Wong and Anthony Au, you mentioned earlier, I mean, you criticised local people, local young people, about their abilities to think independently. And Anthony, you also mentioned that there's too much emphasis on exams in the local system at a younger level, not at university, at a younger level. Well, how do you think we can correct that?
I think that the first thing is because education is from the government. I think the government themselves have to convince that. In particular, if you're really talking about universities, universities, unlike overseas, like America and so on, is Hong Kong is very difficult to get in. But after you get in, it's very easy to graduate. And that is important.
Do we think that we should address these issues before they get to university? Maybe
definitely,
in primary school?
Definitely. I think it's essential because let these people hope because of the examinations. And I mean, this is really making a lot of young people doubt. Okay. And before then, they can get into universities. Something needs to be done. And my experience is that it can be done.
Okay, we've run out of time. Just a letter from G in an email who says, no way can university students be allowed to think for themselves when free discussion is prohibited. No independent thinking and no self-determination is permitted. That comes from G. G, thank you very much indeed for that observation. And thank you very much indeed to our guests today, to Anthony Au from the Hong Kong Information Technology Federation, Stephen Barnes, co-founder of the Hong Kong Visa Centre, Mark Michelson, Chairman Asia CEO Forum, IMA Asia, and Kerry Wong, Vice President of Human Resources of Greater China Region of a multinational corporation. Thank you all very much indeed for joining us today. Finally today, we wanted to turn to the case of this job training centre for disabled teenagers that's going to be relocated to make way for a civil service college in Kwun Tong under a scheme announced by Carrie Lam. The Shine Skill Centre, as I say, is the centre, and a number of people have signed a petition opposing the contentious project. Here's an email, first of all, before we go to our guest, Fernando Chung, for comment, from Mary on this topic. Mary says, dear Backchat, the VTC, that's the Vocational Training Council, the VTC has ambitions to shed its plebeian profile and move into the more elite echelons of the education system. For this purpose, the 750,000 residents of Kwun Tong are to be deprived of a long-promised district park so the VTC can develop an in-your-face campus on the Cha Kwu Ling waterfront. As part of the upgrading process, it wants to shake off these less glamorous services such as facilities for persons with disabilities and ethnic minorities. In exchange for the Gin Palace on the waterfront, it's ceding to the government, the Shine Centre in Kwun Tong and its facilities in Cheung Sha Wan, a grassroots district that certainly has significant demand for technical-focused training. However, these plans are in breach of its obligations under its ordinance. The objects of the council include to provide and coordinate the provision of skills training to people with a disability or age 15 or over for the purpose of improving their employment prospects and preparing them for open employment. In fact, instead of divesting itself of such facilities, the community should be questioning why to date it has only opened 3 Shine centres on Hong Kong Island in Kwun Tong and Tuen Mun, when there should be 5 in total in line with census tables. Under public pressure, plans to shut down the Kwun Tong facility. The Secretary for Welfare is now bleating that, quote, the government will discuss with the VTC regarding the new service mode, depending on its willingness and its assessments of the new service mode. Really, Mr. Secretary, what about something on the lines of reminding the VTC that it has a constitutional duty to provide these services and that failure to do so will certainly trigger a judicial review? In addition to the proposed axing of Shine, nobody has mentioned the plight of the adjoining Holland Hostel that since 1967 has been providing student residential care services for around 100 male youths in care. Its working youth service provides transitional residential services. It also runs the Young Night Drifters service, providing protection and temporary accommodation to young night drifters facing crises and traumatic life events. As for the academy, this should now be built in some new town and new territories with no parking places so that civil servants can smell the roses and experience firsthand the result of flawed planning policies. That comes from Mary. That's an edited version of Mary's comments. Thank you very much indeed for that. Fernando Chung, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What do you think about the... I mean, the government has now said that, they are going to relocate, basically, the Shine Centre. Are you satisfied with the government plans?
Well, no, absolutely not. The very fact that the Shine Skills Centre has to be removed is something very puzzling. It is located in a very convenient location, right next to the MTR station in Wood Tong. A lot of students attending Shine Skills Center have mobility problems. I don't know why the Student Service College has to be located in that place.
I mean, the Secretary for Labour and Welfare, Lo Chi Kwong, Mr. Cheng, said that this building is 50 years old and it needs to be redeveloped. What do you think of that?
Well, if the building has to be rebuilt, then upon its completion, Shine Skills Centre should move back to that centre. Why the Shine Skills Centre has to move to a place which is still unknown to everybody until this point? The other thing is, once it is moved to a different location, the operation or the operator may not be VTC anymore. From previous written instructions from the Labour and Welfare Bureau, the new operator should be a non-governmental organization upon a sort of request for proposal process. So it is not up to VTC to operate that new location. In fact, it was not designed for them. Now, after we had the action last Sunday, we had 800 people came out, most of them students and parents, and we surrounded the Science Skills Center, symbolizing that we want to protect it. Then yesterday, Lo Chi Kwong said there is an option of a new model, an enhanced model, which is yet to be discussed. And one would question, why does Shine Skills Center has to operate in a new mold when there is no evaluation of its services? And Kwun Tong Shine Skills Center has been known to be one of the best centers, vocational training centers. In fact, it has admitted more students than its quota allows.
So
we're not talking about an unsuccessful program. We're talking about a very popular program in a very convenient location.
Yeah. So you talk about access to the facilities.
Yes.
So now that they think they're going to relocate it, what are the other key factors other than obviously access, because we are talking about disabled teenagers? What other factors do you think you
would
put on?
Well, it is the only center in the entire Kowloon district. Like Mary's comment, you just read, I would totally agree that there should be five skill centers instead of three. Now, with this skill center being relocated, we don't know where, and we don't know whether it is actually relocated. There are only two left, one in Bok Fu Lam in Hong Kong Island, and also the other in Tuen Mun. So access is a problem. And also the demand for service is a problem. As I said, Kwun Tong over-admits students. They have more demand than they can cater for. And the Audit Commission report just revealed that SEN student population is growing.
Wouldn't moving to a newer building be an opportunity to provide newer facilities, maybe?
Well, if that is the case, why not review the entire plan and also involve the stakeholders? Let the students and the teachers and the parents know about it so they can be prepared for it, but also have participation in the planning of the whole thing. Now, the whole plan is in the dark. It's in a black box. And even after we demand for a clear explanation of the plan, the Secretary for Labor and Welfare insists that they cannot reveal the location of the building. You know, what sort of secret is this? We're talking about a facility for disabled students for vocational training.
Lochi Kwan was saying it will, the new facilities, which is due for completion in 2026, they will include district health center and other community facilities. I mean, it sounds like they're trying to improve the facilities, no?
Yeah, well, you improve the facility by moving out a school for disabled students. Yeah, you know, why do you have to do that? I mean, to me, this is a bullying. You know, the whole thing is that you like that piece of land, and you want your civil service college to be located there. And then, you know, the disabled students have to move out. Why would a civilized government do that?
Okay, well, Fernando Chang, thanks for joining us. They could come. They could build the training center here in Broadcast Drive and get a building for us. That would be very, very welcome. We don't have to operate in the car park. Okay, that's it from me and from us. Jenny, many thanks to you.
Thank you.
Thank you to Fernando Chang, the legislator with the Labour Party.